Thanks for tuning in this weekend to Let's Talk Portland, Odyssey Portland's weekly public affairs program. I'm Gary Bloxham.
On the show this time, I would like to welcome Bonnie Cushman. Bonnie is the program manager for the Regional Water Providers Consortium. Hey there, Bonnie. Welcome to Let's Talk Portland.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How are you?
Doing great, thanks.
And it's summertime, so water is a big deal around here in the summer.
It is, yeah. We've been having great dry weather, mostly warm, and very little rainfall, which means that we've been pulling a lot of water from our stored reservoirs and streams across the region now.
And water comes from all over the place to provide us with water, right? I mean, how many places does it come from?
So we have five main sources within the metro region. So we'll think about Clackamas River, think about the Trask Tualatin out at west. We have the Bull Run watershed. We have groundwater. So we have a number of different main sources, and then we have lots and lots of secondary or tertiary sources that we can pull from as well.
It's so great to, this probably sounds really silly, but it's so great to be able to just go to your kitchen sink, turn it on, and water comes out.
It doesn't sound silly, actually. It wasn't all that long ago, if you think historically, that wasn't possible. And we've gotten so used to it that we kind of take it for granted.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. One thing that's important is to use water wisely in the summer, especially around here. Why is that so important?
Well, it's so important because, as I mentioned, we get very little rainfall. You know, the joke is always after July 5th, summer starts. I think this year was a little bit earlier. And we tend to use a lot more water, watering our landscapes and lawns, washing our cars, that kind of thing during the summertime. And that's, of course, when it's not being replenished by rainfall. And so it's really important to take a look at how we're using water in our daily lives and try to use it as efficiently as possible.
It always seems like we get so much rain throughout the rest of the year. Besides, I mean, summers are usually pretty dry here, but the rest of the year we get so much rain. So it seems like we should have always plenty of water to go around, but that's not the case.
Well, we do have plenty of water. You know, our water providers actually really do a great job of managing and planning for our water. But our summers really depend on that rainfall, right? And so we store a lot of water for most systems, although the Clackamas River, for example, has no storage. And so whatever's in the river is actually what they have available throughout the season. So it's not that we don't have enough water. It's just that we tend to use it and it's not getting replenished during the summer. So we want to make sure that we're using it as wisely as possible.
Let's talk about some tips and things that you can do to use water more wisely, like watering the garden. How often should you do that?
We recommend watering about twice a week, depending on what types of plants you have. And so I think sometimes people will water every day because they're trying to keep their plants healthy. But really, you want to water twice a week. That'll make your plants have stronger roots, which means when you go away for the summer vacation or we get a really hot spell, they're better able to deal with that lack of water for a slightly longer time period.
And I'm guessing native plants are a little better because they're used to this type of weather.
Yeah, native plants are great. I always like to say you can have your cake and eat it too here in our region because so many plants do really well if they're put in the right place and they have the right conditions. So we have native plants, but there's also hybrid plants that do really well with little to no water and little to no care too once they're established in their space.
Yeah. How about watering the lawn?
Yeah, so lawns tend to be one of the more thirsty plants. And so when you're thinking about lawns, you want to make sure that you're watering about twice a week. On average, they need about an inch of water a week. As we're going through these longer, hotter, drier spaces, they might need a little bit more each week. So it kind of depends on where we are in the season.
But an inch of water, how can you tell that you've watered an inch in a week?
I love that you're asking that question. So it's really kind of easy to do. You need about 15 minutes, and then you need a flat bottom can, think like a tuna can. Okay. And you put it next to your sprinkler head and run your sprinkler for 15 minutes. And that'll tell you how much water your sprinkler is using. And then you can do a little bit of simple math. So we've got all of those step-by-step instructions on our website. You only have to do it once, and then you know, oh, okay, so now I know I can water less sometimes or more, and we'll tell you how much to water each week as well.
So 15 minutes probably doesn't fill up the tuna can.
Not usually.
So,
yeah.
So that just gives you a guide of like 15 minutes a day for every other day or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it'll tell you how much to water. And then, you know, as we're heading into fall, we're going to need to water less because plants naturally go into dormancy. And so knowing how much your sprinkler uses will help you figure out, ooh, how much do I dial it back as we're heading into fall?
Okay. Now, we talked a little bit about watering the garden. How about the landscaping around your house? Is that different?
Yeah, so lawns, like I said, are a little bit more thirsty, but a lot of established perennials, those plants that come back every single year, or shrubs or trees, actually need quite a bit less water. And so if you're looking at lawns, they use about an inch. A lot of these other ones use half that or even less than that each week.
Let's talk a bit about watering systems, like irrigation systems. What's the best way to use those?
Well, the most important thing to do is to get out there and see how they're running. So a lot of times what we do is we'll turn them on at the beginning of the season, and then we just kind of let them do their thing. And they also run during the night a lot of times. So if you go out there and turn it on and walk around and look and see, you'll see that a lot of times something's not working right. So for example, I walked part of the way to work today and I was walking by a lot of different irrigation systems. And I noticed that there was one that had this huge geyser coming up and they just had a head that was broken off, but I bet you they didn't know because I was walking at 6:30 in the morning. Who except for me is out there?
So, it's, yeah, good thing to check. We had one of those with setting up the irrigation system at my condominium complex, and it was the middle of the night. Somebody just happened to come home in the middle of the night and realized we had a geyser coming out of one of the flower beds. So it happens.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that often will happen, too, is I kind of call it like the fog machine effect. But there's sometimes when sprinkler systems are running and their pressure is too high. And so you get this really fine mist that is going out across the landscape, and it actually doesn't do a good job of watering. And so that's something that if you have somebody who's working on your system, you want to make sure that that they check it out.
Yeah. Well, and since we have been talking about irrigation systems that happen at, like most of the watering happens at night, why is it at night?
Well, one of the things that we want to do is make sure that the water that you're actually putting out into your landscape gets to where you want it to, i.e. the plants. And so you don't want to lose that to evaporation. So watering anytime after 6 p.m. or before 10 a.m. is going to maximize your water going into the soil, into your plants, rather than up into the air.
Because it evaporates.
Exactly.
I took a walk in my neighborhood yesterday, and somebody was, their whole irrigation system, I don't know if they were testing it, but they were watering. I thought, that's not good. It's like noon. Probably the exact wrong time to be watering your lawn.
Yeah, you know, and I think there's the best time, and then sometimes, depending on what you've got going on, you gotta water at noon. But if you can't, if you can help it, try to do it, you know, after 6 or before 10 a.m., if at all possible. And that's going to make sure that the water that you're putting out there is going where you want to.
You're listening to Let's Talk Portland. More coming up in just a moment.
You're listening to Let's Talk Portland, and we're talking today with Bonnie Cushman, Program Manager for the Regional Water Providers Consortium. Bonnie, so there's lots of technology out there, right? So what kinds of technology and conservation devices should I use to be water smart?
So there's new-ish irrigation controllers. They've actually been around for a little while, but they've really come a long way in the last couple of years. And they're called weather-based irrigation controllers or smart controllers. And what they do is take a look at what's happening weather-wise in your local area and tailor the water to what you have got going on. So we're expecting rain over the next couple of weeks, a little bit off and on. And so if you have a weather-based irrigation controller, you would be able to say, it would automatically take into account how much rainfall you have in your location and adjust the amount that you need to water accordingly.
That's cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. And then if you have an older system and you want kind of the same function, you can look for a rain sensor. They cost about $15-$20. They're pretty easy to install. And that'll take into account the amount of rainfall. So if you have an older system and you want to get that same sort of functionality, you can can do that as well.
Where can I get these devices?
You can get them at almost any home improvement store or online as well.
Yeah. And you have tons of information on your website, don't you, about all kinds of water conservation. What's the website?
We do. It's regionalh2o.org.
Okay. What about things like lawn care, washing my car, weed removal? How can I be water smart doing those things?
So one of the things that I think a lot of us don't necessarily take into consideration is that things that we do at our home or in our gardens have repercussions that affect the health of our local waterways. So, for example, instead of using a pesticide for weed control, for example, you could use hand pulling, pulling up weeds by hand. And there's all sorts of different tools that can make it easier. So if you can't kneel down and do it, there's ones that you can use to stand up and that kind of thing. So it sounds silly, but it's one small thing that all of us can do to make our waterways more healthy. Cleaning up after our pets is another thing that people can do to help with keeping our waterways healthy. If you're going to use something like a pesticide, you want to make sure that you're doing it on a clear, dry, non-windy day. And you're just spot spraying exactly where you need it and not kind of doing it willy-nilly kind of all over the place.
Yeah, that's really good advice because those sprays just are toxic and go everywhere.
They are. And, you know, I think one of the other things that we can do is if you do have a lawn and you're wanting to fertilize it, wait till fall to fertilize it. So wait until maybe next month. And when you're doing that, make sure that any of those kernels stay on your landscape, right? Because we don't want it to be picked up with runoff and go down to the storm drain because, of course, those make their way untreated into our local waterways.
Okay. How about washing your cars? I love to wash my car.
You know, it's one of those things you either love it or you hate
it, right? Yeah, right.
I take our car to a car wash because they recycle the water. Okay. And so that's keeping all the grime and soap and everything into a place where it's not going to go into our local waterways. But if you want to do it at home, that's totally cool too. So make sure that your hose has a shut-off nozzle so that the water is only running when you want it to. And then what we recommend is actually rolling up some towels and diverting the water so that it doesn't go down your driveway and down the street and into the storm drain. Divert it onto your lawn.
Oh.
And you want to make sure that you're using like biodegradable soap so that it doesn't kill your lawn. But that's one great way to keep it at home and keep that runoff on your property as well.
That's great advice.
Yeah.
I like that. So we've spent some time now talking about water conservation outside. Let's move inside. What are some things we can do inside the home that help save water?
The best thing to do is check your toilet for leaks regularly. And that sounds like something that maybe you would notice, you would hear a trickle or something like that. But oftentimes toilets are, their leaks are silent. Oh. And they can use hundreds to thousands of gallons of water a month. So it really Whoa. Can add up quickly.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
That is crazy.
So I have a 10-year-old. I like to spend some time with her in the summer and teach her how to check for toilet leaks. And so we just use some food dye. We put 10 drops in the back of the toilet tank. And then I have her do the timer. And 20 minutes later, she looks in the bowl. And if we've got color in the bowl, then we know we have a leak. And if we don't, we're good to go.
Wow. That sounds pretty simple.
It is. And, you know, kids really get a kick out of being in charge of whether or not you have a leak at home, too. So that's a great thing to do with kids during the summer.
Yeah. What other ways can we conserve water inside?
One of the best things to do is stay in the bathroom and look at replacing faucet aerators and shower heads with WaterSense labeled fixtures. Those use 20% less water than traditional fixtures naturally, so you don't have to change how long you're going to shower or anything like that. And those are readily available in any home improvement store. So that's what you can do in the bathroom. You know, in the kitchen, it's kind of the same type of things. Let your dishwasher do the work. So most dishwashers use less water than you would if you ran your faucet for 4 minutes. So why not just let them do the work for you? And again, you can find usually faucet aerators and a lot of different finishes that you can put into your kitchen to save water as well.
So back up just a little bit. You're telling me I don't have to do my dishes? I mean, I can do them in the dishwasher. I don't have to do them by hand?
Yeah. Oddly enough,
better?
It is. It's better. But everybody that I talk to, or many people, I should say, that I talk to, think that washing by hand is more efficient. And it can be if you're really kind of a stickler. But a lot of us, we kind of let it run a little bit more. So why not let the dishwasher do it?
Yeah. Okay. I'm down with that. Let's talk about having water in the home, too. Having a good supply of water in an emergency is really important. Talk about that.
It is. So what we're really trying to prepare for is if there's a large earthquake. So we recommend having 14 gallons or 1 gallon per person per day to last for 14 days in case of an emergency. But we know that there's other emergencies, whether it might be a broken pipe during the winter or other things that come along. So it's always important to make sure that you have a store of emergency water at home.
14 gallons, well, 1 gallon per day for 14 days. Where do you store that?
I love that question because it kind of depends on where you live, right? So I live in a single family home with a detached garage. So I have 255-gallon drums in my garage. We have some in our car because, you know, we never know where we're going to be if something happens. And then we have a couple of containers in our home as well. But my coworker has, she lives in an apartment with her husband and two cats, and they have far less space. So they get really creative. They put containers in their bookshelves behind their books. Oh. They put stuff underneath their sinks. I've seen people stick water underneath their sofa. So look at your space creatively and then get some containers that will fit that space.
Yeah, I'm sure you can find some flat things that you can store water in and put it under the bed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, That's a good idea. One thing that's really important is to think about is that water is more important than food is. Is that correct?
Yes, in the sense that we can live for days without water, just days, but we can live without food for a lot longer. And so it really makes sense to start with water and then build your other emergency kit items after that.
That's really important, yeah, because you don't even think about it. That seems like food would be more important than water is, but nope.
No, and a lot of times, you know, when we're thinking about emergency food preparation, even, you know, you're going to need water in order to prepare that food that you're thinking about as well. So, yeah, start with water and then move on to food and other aspects of emergency prep.
Is there anything else we should keep in mind with about water and emergency preparedness?
So you always want to make sure that you have at least one way to treat more water. So start with storing water and store as much as you can. So 14 is your goal, 14 gallons per person. But you also want to make sure that you have a way to treat additional water. And if your home or apartment has a hot water heater, that could be a source for emergency water. And so that's another thing. We have some great information on our website, including videos, which are available in 12 languages that'll tell you how to get that water out of your water heater in an emergency.
Yeah. To treat water, what do you use to treat water?
There's lots of different things, but one of the best things actually is liquid unscented bleach. You're going to need that to keep things sanitary if we're without water for a long period of time. And just a couple of drops, and we have, again, instructions on our website on how much you would need, but that's one of the best things. Another thing that you could have is a personal water filter, for example. So a lot of people have those for camping. So you want to make sure that you know how to use it, make sure that it's well taken care of, and that you have it located in an area where you can get it in an emergency.
Yeah. What type of emergency do you think it would take to have a catastrophe with our water supply?
Well, like I said, the big one that we're talking about is a large scale earthquake, right? And that could knock our water systems out of use for some time. And so what we're looking at is like, how do we survive on our own for 2 weeks or more, you know, until help can come to our region.
Right.
But even things like I mentioned, a broken water main, you know, we were having a dinner party a couple of years ago, and pipe in our neighborhood, you know, broke and flooded a whole bunch of different things. And my husband was like, oh, I guess we're going to have to cancel the the dinner party. Luckily, he'd already made the food. And I was like, no need to worry. We've got emergency water right here. And I just brought that out. And we used that as an opportunity to just kind of talk about how to be resilient, even in everyday sort of circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess when we think of emergencies, we think of the big one or a wildfire or something like that. But yeah, it could just be the guys working down the street, hit a water main, and you're out of water for a few days.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is no good. So talk to me about publicalerts.org. What is that?
So publicalerts.org is a great website where you can get all sorts of other non-water related emergency preparedness information. And it's also where you can sign up to get emergency alerts. So each county management will use that as a public alerts as a way to get information to you to let you know if there's an emergency in your area. They're hyper-localized messages, but it is something that you have to sign up for in order to get those messages. They're not automatically going to come to you.
What kind of alerts do you get?
Well, you know, it could be, I remember there was a large fire in my neighborhood a couple of years ago. And so they were giving information about that and to stay away from okay. that area. But water providers would tell you, for example, if there's a need to boil your water for an emergency, we would potentially, if it's a big enough event, send it out through public alerts.
And those come through text, I'm imagining, or email or?
Yeah, you can sign up for a text. That's the best way. You can also get them emails, and they will do calls, but that takes more time because it takes time to do right. all of the call.
Okay.
Yeah.
How can I find out more information about my drinking water?
So go to our website to start with. That's regionalh2o.org. We'll talk about all of the different water sources in the region. If you want to know more about your specific drinking water, reach out to your water provider. They actually put together what's called a consumer confidence report or water quality report. And those come out each summer. They have to be prepared and provided to all of the customers each year. And so that's one way to learn about it. And then oftentimes water providers also do tours or other educational opportunities for folks to learn more about their water.
Yeah. How do I know who my water provider is?
This is a funny thing. You know, a lot of times people don't know where their water comes from. So we have a great tool on our website where you can just type in your address and it'll tell you whether it'll tell you who your water provider is. An interesting fact, there are people who live across the street from one another who have different water providers. Oh. So depending on where you live, you might have a different water provider than your neighbor.
How long has the Regional Water Providers Consortium worked together?
We are in our 28th year at this point. So we started in the mid-90s, really talking about regional water supply planning for a 50-year outlook.
Okay. Does this happen all over the place? Is it unique to our Portland region?
We were one of the first groups to do this kind of work together when we started. There's more and more groups that are doing similar types of efforts to work together. We're unique, though, in the sense that we really find lots of different ways to work together. So we work together for regional water supply planning, all of our conservation programming, emergency preparedness. So how do water providers prepare for emergencies? Basically, any way that we can work together to save our customers money and really kind of take advantage of group thinking and peer sharing and whatnot, we do it.
Okay. What's the most important water conservation tip that you think is out there?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Well, I would have to say really checking your watering system because we do use quite a bit more water during the summer. So knowing how much your water system uses and then changing how much you put on your landscape throughout the season is going to be your number one thing.
And you'll probably see lower water bills too.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think if I was going to sneak in one other thing, too, I would say if you have a perpetually damp spot in your yard or it's muddy all the time, you might have a leak.
Oh, yeah.
So look around for leaks. That goes for indoor, too. We talked about toilets, but, you know, dripping faucets also use quite a bit of water as well.
You've been giving us such great tips, Bonnie. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
This was fun. We've been talking today with Bonnie Cushman, Program Manager for the Regional Water Providers Consortium. Thanks.
Thank you.
If you'd like to hear this interview again, just search for Let's Talk Portland on the Odyssey app. Let's Talk Portland is an Odyssey Portland public affairs program.